episode of Modern Manhood Cold Takes is brought to you by Shift Podcast by Alberta Innovates. Shift showcases the work being done in the province's innovation ecosystem. Everything from health to clean energy and everything in between. So join hosts Katie Dean and John Hagen as they interview the researchers, entrepreneurs, and businesses that are shifting our perspectives about innovation in the Alberta province. On their latest podcast, they talk about creativity, research, and being an entrepreneur with Jana Rieger from the True Angle Medical Technologies. They'll talk about Anna's journey from researcher to entrepreneur and the help that she and her partners received as their business grew. So find Shift Podcast by Alberta Innovates on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find it at shift.albertainnovates.ca. That's shift.albertainnovates.ca. Modern Manhood Cold Takes is also brought to you by the Edmonton Community Foundation. Now, the foundation acts as a bridge between donors and charities to create a strong, vibrant community for generations to come. You can start an endowment fund yourself or with a group. Once it reaches $10,000, you can start distributing funds. And the ECF also has a program called Vital Signs, which is an annual checkup conducted by the Edmonton Community Foundation in partnership with the Edmonton Social Planning Council to measure how the community is doing. This just focuses on the newest income-earning population, the millennials, just like me. Learn about everything the ECF does at ecfoundation.org. That's ecfoundation.org.
We're going to start. Do you know what you're talking about today?
This is a great way to start this. Hello, everyone. Thank you for popping into Cold Takes Live. You know me. My name is Herman Pijegas. This is a long time coming. This is my old podcast partner, Elliot Tanti. I should have done an old 104 style introduction here. So, like, person who I definitely will draft on my hockey team, regardless of the accusations that he has. Elliot Tanti.
Well, I see they're of the same quality as they used to be.
No, that's exactly it.
I'll leave it to the audience to decide what level of quality they are.
Man of quality. Exactly it. Elliot, how are you?
I'm good. It's so nice to see you. It's so nice to be here. I'm really honored that you asked, and I'm really, yeah, just nice to be podcasting with you again, and nice to be hanging out with you guys. Everyone watching and listening.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll get some people to watch and listen. If not, you're going to watch this and listen to this later in the broadcast. So also, like, just to let you know, like, you know, Cold Takes is supported by the Next Gen Men online community, the online members. Jake likes to call them the Next Gen Members. I don't know about that name still. What do you think, Elliot? What do you think about the name Members?
Members. I mean, I feel like that may not be inclusive to everyone that's a part of the organization.
Yeah. And I get what he's trying to say here. And I totally understand.
Members.
And yeah. I keep telling him, it's like, it's hard to say. I keep like tongue twisting every time I say it. And Next also, members. Yes.
Say it three times fast.
Yeah, I don't know, man. So I'm going to leave it out to you, community. This should be a thing. Tell us what you want to be called yourself. Like, do you want to be called Members? Do you want to be called something else? Maybe you can be Next Gen Men Heads, or, I don't know. We could be Next Gen Men Stands.
Next Gen Men Ambassadors.
Love it. This is why you're in communications, Elliot. This is why.
Because I occasionally can name things.
Really earning it today. But we have to say that we are 75 people and counting. And it includes people like Jonathan Carter, Paul Dick, Stephen Garrett, Eric Queenan, and Russell Dick. Thank you so much for being part of the Next Gen Men community, the online community, the members, the men heads, the men stands, the men ambassadors. We could not do the work that we do hosting such a safe space online for boys or produce these wonderful podcasts without your support. So if you'd like to go keep the lights on at Next Gen Men, and maybe you want to snag some sweet perks yourself, go to nextgenmen.ca/join. As well, Cult Takes and More Manhood itself is brought to you by the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown and community supported. Elliot, why did you want to be a part of the Next Gen Men community?
I think there was two reasons. I think that for me, the first thing was the slogan, you know, pursuing a world where boys, men and boys feel less pain and do less harm really spoke to me. That was one of the main reasons why I was really engaged and really wanted to support the organization. And I also think that you, when you feel something and you care about something, you got to put your money where your mouth is. It's not a major investment to make. And it's going to a good cause, and it's supporting good, important programming that supports, a healthier and more inclusive community. And that's for me, working in the not-for-profit world and in the charity world, money's important. And if you have the means and you're able to engage in that way, I would really recommend it because it's a great organization, but it's also, you're helping to enable, a lot of access to programs that, many men and boys just wouldn't be able to have.
Absolutely. And that's that good point about putting your money where your mouth is. And I think that's, I don't want to guilt anybody for doing anything, but at the same time, like I know there's some people that it is COVID. It's been tough for in regards to financial situations. But this is also hard for a lot of nonprofits. It's been hard for a lot of people that have struggled through this, and then that affects our community at large. So, totally. That's a great point of view of thinking about the nonprofit sector, including Next Gen Men. One of the amazing things that Ellie and I did, a bit before the pandemic was we did a little podcast called the 104 podcast, and it was about arguing about the Oilers. That's really what it became to about, was when we watched some of the games, we talked about it. We didn't really argue a whole lot. We're good buddies. So we're not going to yell at each other. However, we did talk a lot about like social issues. We did. It's interesting. One of the episodes, we were talking about Don Cherry, and Don Cherry got fired while we were talking about it. So it was a very, memorable episode, when that happened. But we weren't afraid to talk about social stuff that was happening in the hockey community. And lately, there's been a lot of like social stuff that's happened in the hockey community in the off season. So, do you want to look? Let's talk about, Logan Mailloux, and, a story that has garnered so much airwaves and so much talk that even the prime minister had to like chime in about this. So, take us through what you know about the Logan Mailloux, news, just so people might not know.
So Logan Mailloux was, because of COVID, a number of players were forced to sort of play overseas, during last season and previous seasons before that. And it's not an uncommon thing for young players to go and play abroad. He did, and I believe he was playing in Sweden, correct?
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
And, while he was there, he was charged and convicted, with a sentence essentially related to like revenge pornography. He had taken some photos of a woman that he was with that were sexual without her permission, and he'd shared them, I believe, with his team. Although I don't know the specifics of that. Regardless, he was charged and convicted and found guilty.
Yeah.
Upon that charge and conviction, he came back to North America and was eligible to be drafted this year by an NHL team. Obviously, for those of you that don't know, young players, as they come into the league, they're actually selected by NHL teams who have the first rights to sign them. We won't get into the details around that, but essentially what Logan did in light of this information coming public, and I'm not sure if he made it public himself or it was made public otherwise, he put out a statement saying, recognizing that he had made a mistake, that he was sorry for it, and that he felt as though he didn't deserve to be drafted this year. He didn't want to join an NHL club, and that instead he wanted to go back to junior hockey and spend a year, quote unquote, working on himself and be demonstrating more maturity than he'd shown in the past. And, and then would, be making himself available the next year. So that in and of itself was a pretty big story. Logan Mailloux was projected to be a very high draft pick, first round. was a coveted prospect by many NHL clubs. And so, you know, for someone of that pedigree to make the decision to not, or to withdraw or pull themselves out of draft eligibility, or at least say so, was a pretty significant piece of news. It was only towered by the fact that the last team to draft, or the second last team to draft in the first round of the NHL playoffs, the Montreal Canadiens, made the decision to select him anyway.
Yeah, and that was what started everything else. And it was something that everybody was kind of like, I saw Twitter when it was happening, and a lot of people were like, huh? Like, why? Like, what was the reasoning behind this? And it was interesting in regards to the Montreal Canadiens specifically, because they just came from, you know, like in the, like being in the playoffs, went to the final. They were, you know, not a team that was supposed to go to the final, but they did. And it was a really nice story in that regard. But then they go on and do this. And it was like immediately all like the crap that is like all of a sudden, like the goodwill just like deflated out of the room. And it was just a stark reminder of like what hockey culture and sports culture in general is like in some ways. You know what I mean?
Oh, I think that's such an excellent point. And that's exactly where I'd start too. Nothing better demonstrates that hockey has a problem than this exact situation here. Mm-hmm. You and I were talking about, we've been talking about this for what, 3 years? How long ago was it when we first started?
Yeah, it's been like 3 years. Yeah.
You know, like we've been talking about, you know, hockey has an issue for a long time. And this is like the perfect demonstration of exactly the type of culture that exists, you know, in the sport. You know, I was, I really struggled with the initial announcement by Logan Mailloux. I thought, you know, there was, I felt not struggled in the sense that he should have done it. I think he absolutely should have pulled himself out. I thought he was overly commended for his graciousness. I mean, this is still a guy that made like a big mistake, and like, let's not get too crazy here. Like, you know, he's done something respectful, but let's not overly celebrate him. But you know what? It was a signal of it for me, like, oh, okay, maybe there's a maturation in hockey and hockey culture and expectation. Mm-hmm. And all of, as you said, all of that goodwill, but just for, just that's what a perfect demonstration of just how blind the majority of people that operate in this professional sport are to cultural norms and what's happening outside in other spaces.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah. And it was this idea, this like the ideas of being blind, like this idea that like, you couldn't be self-aware enough to not do this. And it was interesting because like the Montreal Canadiens, like their reasoning was, well, someone was going to select them anyways. And that just shows a bigger problem anyways of what it means to be a hockey player and how that, you know, like really stratifies that idea of manhood in regards to everyone else, right? Like if you're a hockey player, well, whatever, you're like dominant sport person, you're up here in this like manhood hierarchy, right? Everything else just follows that, including women, right? And I love this. I like that you mentioned this, you know, sense of like, oh, you know, he did the right thing. And he, you know, of course, I think he did the right thing in saying like, I should not be drafted. However, there was stories afterwards that like the woman that he, you know, he did this for, you know, against, he was like, you know, he didn't really apologize to me. He sent me like one, like a two paragraph text, no, not even like a two sentence text, she said. And that was it. Like he barely apologized to me. I don't believe him is basically what she's saying. And this goes to show you that like, hockey players in general, like a lot of guys, not just hockey players, but a lot of guys, including hockey players, get so much benefit of the doubt. And a lot of people were mad. And a lot of people, I'm so glad that a lot of people were mad. I'm so glad that people were just kind of up in arms because this happens a lot in hockey. Like Logan Mailloux is not the first person that something happened to them and then still got rewarded. Like something he did and then still got rewarded, right? So it's like, I don't know how to wrestle with that notion, right?
Well, I think that's an excellent point. When you start talking about that hierarchy, like what we're talking about here is like patriarchal status too, right? Like mm-hmm. if you have a certain skill set that is enjoyed by millions of people, or you have a certain capacity to make money, or both, the consequences for your actions and the outcomes differ immensely than everyone else. And that only continues to go down in that hierarchy as you go. And you know, I think this is the perfect representation. It's literally like you're literally weighted based on when you are selected. And mm-hmm. his value as a hockey player was impacted, but not that significantly after what was like a really significant incident.
Yeah.
And not an allegation. The other thing too, this is not an allegation.
No, he was charged.
This is not a he said, charged. She said. He was charged. He admitted guilt. He came forward with the information. You know, so this is not like it happened, right? It happened.
Yeah.
And not a difficult thing to prove either, but you know, it happened. And really, like, you just see like his status fell, but not all that much.
No.
And it's amazing. And we see this in all types of pieces of society all the time. You know, if you are a high level CEO, if you are a prominent person in your local community or your religious group, the consequences for misbehavior are different, depending on those like patriarchal statuses.
Totally. Right? Totally. And that's, it is different. It's different for them and it's different for everyone else. And I know a lot of people wrote about how they were very disappointed, and not only the team, but like just the sport in general, right? Like, when I'm just reading about like what he got charged with, and it's a, so he got charged, like, I'm going to say this wrong, but it's an interesting word. It's called Krankenfotografieren, which means photographic activity constituting an invasion of privacy, and Furtal, which is the umlaut, F-O-R-T-A-L with an umlaut, which is defamation. And so, like, those are heavy, heavy fines, right? Like, and he got fined. He didn't go to jail or anything like that. However, it's just disappointing that these things still happen, right? And it's still disappointing that the Montreal Canadiens are going to say, well, we're going to use this to show that you know, we're going to teach these young boys through Logan that they could, they can be better. But I'm just like, well, what does that show young men? Like, it just shows them that you can just do this stuff and you'll still be okay.
If you're skilled enough, if you have enough money, it doesn't really matter. That's what it says. Mm-hmm. That's what it says.
That's the lesson.
And let's not, you know, we contextualize Logan Milieu in the context of sort of his situation. This is coming off some other serious allegations out of, you know, the Chicago hockey team as well.
Yeah, the Blackhawks.
Which I believe picked either right before or
right after.
In which in order to make amends for some really serious allegations of sexual assault cover-ups in the organization, just decided to have, you know, as a symbol, had a group of women make their selection on their behalf. So here's this like gross, ugly display, like not inauthentic display of like solidarity with women, which is already questionable to begin with. Mm-hmm. Immediately after, the Montreal Canadiens draft this guy who's been asked not to be drafted because of these charges. It's like you couldn't write. I wish Samantha was here because
I miss her.
Make this up, right? Oh, but hockey doesn't have a problem. Anyone who thinks that hockey doesn't have a problem just has to look at like picks number 30 and 31 at the last NHL draft and maybe think that and try to describe to me that hockey doesn't have in two draft selections over the course of 20 minutes. There's enough proof there that there's a problem in the organization in large and in general as well too.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it was like, there was, another story last year, where the Arizona Coyotes, drafted a player. I forget who it is now. But they drafted a player and it was Mitchell Miller. That's what it is. They renounced the rights of Mitchell Miller, who pleaded guilty after a series of racist bullying incidents that landed him in juvenile court. Miller was, the Coyotes knew this and they still picked him, even though he was picked in like the third or fourth round. He was 111th overall. So it wasn't like he was a high draft pick. However, again, I'm just like, what I'm saying is like this stuff is just keeps happening, right?
So
like,
can I ask you a question? Because I'm interested in your take on this.
Sure.
What role do National Hockey League teams, should they be playing in sort of social change and difficult social conversations like the ones that we're having, whether it's bullying and racism in that context or in the context of Montreal? Because I think I know how the teams would respond. But what role do you think as a fan and as someone who watches the league, and like what is appropriate? Where is the line? What should they be doing? Or
what role should they be doing? Should the teams be doing?
What's the responsibility there?
I take this as kind of like a broad view of like what the world and society looks like, right? So if you live in Canada, you know that hockey is a big cultural milestone in Canada, right? It's the same thing if you go to the US, you'd be like, football is, baseball is, and even just hockey in general too, still kind of as sports in general, big thing, right? There should be a little bit of self-awareness and say like, yeah, we're not saying like these athletes are should be the heroes of the world, but little kids do look up to these people, right? Like little kids, this is just part of our society that they do. And it's unfortunate that's the case. It's not like anybody else, but that's life. So they should have a little bit of self-awareness to understand, hey man, like this, like not only should we be a steward for making a solid product on the ice and an entertainment product, and because that's what we are, but also that we are a part of this community. We are a part of the people that are around us. And I think that just goes with a lot of organizations. Just they understand that, like, hey, we're not just like selling ice cream. Like I'm just thinking of Ben and Jerry's, for example, because they're just like, there's somebody who has an acute understanding of that, right? Like they understand that they're a part of this community, right? So they're just like, they understand what the waves, and they have to make statements and stuff like that. So they have no problems doing that. But hockey has a big issue about that because they're worried about their investors and they're worried about the money that's coming in and they're worried about angering the wrong people, quote unquote. So they should have a real good self-awareness of what the community wants. And I was like, this is a minor thing, but like I felt it when like Ethan Bear got traded. Like I feel like that was like you traded this man who is a steward for the community in such a a non-visible community as the indigenous community. And you traded that man. Like he is way more valuable than just like your second line, second pairing defenseman. And the lack of self-awareness of that is just astounding, especially in hockey. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know what I want from these teams, but just self-awareness.
So just to contextualize the Ethan Bear thing. So the Oilers have traded him for another player. Ethan Bear is a Cree from I believe Saskatchewan, right? But a role model for, and you know, has done some things like even having his name written in Cree in the back of his jersey during warm up. He's been a spokesperson for inclusivity,
and
accessibility for Indigenous. Played in Edmonton, the single the municipality with the most surrounding Indigenous population in the country. Mm-hmm. And was traded away to the United States because of a hockey move. And so you're saying that there's more, the team has more than just a responsibility to field a good team, that they also have to be socially conscious as well too.
And absolutely. They need to be stewards to the community, right? And I think that like they keep saying those things. They keep doing like the hockey is for everyone, the Oilers Community Foundation, or we're part of this thing. And it's just not just the Oilers. All hockey teams have this, right? So they always say, like the Oilers family, they're part of the city and part of, but when push comes to shove, they're not. They're a business. Like they're just they're trying to make money. They're trying to save for their investors. They're trying to, just make money. That's really what it is, right? And it sucks when it happens that way, right? Do you know what?
I completely agree with you. And I too felt the same shock at the Bear trade, and disappointment. Cause there was just like no third line winger that was going to bring the same value to that, to me as like a fan and yeah. the enjoyment about that. Like, you know, there is some way there in some ways in what is like a, like incredibly white league. I did feel some pride that the team that I cheer for had Darnell Nurse, a man of color, Juju Okara, mm-hmm. a man of color, mm-hmm. and Ethan Bear, an indigenous man of color on our team.
Caleb Jones.
Exactly. I missed one. Yeah. So, you know, and there was like, that there was like a, you know, and that said something that represented something mm-hmm. in terms of the values of the team and that race at least was not a barrier to access that team. I think that the majority of hockey teams would completely disagree with you. majority of hockey
of execs, they would.
And most fans, frankly, would completely disagree with you around, you know, trading, status or those types of that the social consciousness for product on the ice. But not here. I think that there is a balance. I think there is a balance around those types of things. And I think your point is well made, but that speaks to the culture that we're talking about.
Right? And that's the thing. Like, and I want to clarify that it's just because, like, if you think about this pragmatically, if you've been thinking about this, like, even financially, if you're like a person that's like, hey, you know what? If we are just going to think about the bottom line, or if you just want to think about like, hey, we're going to not even just like field the best team on the ice, but it's more like, hey, this person not only brings us he's not only a good hockey player because he was a good hockey player. He is a person that lifts a specific type of community that is marginalized and also is somebody who like spends money too, right? It's not like they will buy Ethan Bear Cree single like jerseys, like, and people have like, that's a symbol. That is an absolute signal to that community and says,
I think I've got a signed Ethan Bear thing right here.
See, that's amazing. See, okay. So hold that up. Hold it up to the screen because I kind of want people to see it, that. You can see that. That is amazing. And I think that is like, and when he, you know, like it was unfortunate too because the Oilers got swept and Ethan Bear made a mistake on the ice and there was a lot of abuse, hurled at him and, you know, and not, actually, Oilers fans and a lot of Oilers fans actually stood up for him too. Like all obviously there was the idiots Oilers fans, but there's also like there was this amazing like swell of support for Ethan Bear, just because he means so much to this community. He is much more than like than just this what he does on the ice, right?
The league stood behind him, the team stood behind him, the fans came and had a rally, and he showed up at it, and it was like this sort of amazing moment of solidarity after like it was a really difficult kind of end to the season. And absolutely. Obviously troublesome for him. And, you know, you think like, you know, none of that was in your mind when you decided to trade him for like a left right wing, like a third line left wing, you know, and you know, we're getting to what it means about, but yeah. You know, like for me, it's like, really? Like that didn't matter to you guys? Like that was not in your mind, you know, the impact on the community and like the surrounding community and how important. Yeah, I'm totally with you. I think that's an excellent point.
And the team that he goes to too, like let's talk about that for a bit. So the team that he goes to, Carolina Hurricanes, just signed this like Tony DeAngelo. And Tony DeAngelo, who has said racial slurs when he was a junior, Tony DeAngelo, whose last team he got into a fight with his own goalie. With his teammates being like, I don't want to be a part of this with this player, got outcasted. And then the Carolina Hurricanes decided to pick him up. And then they traded for Ethan Bear. So it was like during that week, that whole offseason, it was like the Tony DeAngelo thing. It was the Logan Mayhew thing. And then it was the ongoing saga of the fucking Chicago Blackhawks. Like it was all that time. I was just so disappointed in being a hockey fan. And that really sucked, man. Like, it's just because I love hockey. It's just, it really sucked.
Well, and it's really particularly frustrating when you see another sport in the Big Four, you know, going to the completely the opposite direction, the way the NBA mm-hmm. has in terms of empowering players, allowing for protests, being really you know, progressive and open-minded. Not perfect. The NBA is not perfect. I never say that.
And no teams are perfect.
And no teams are perfect.
No leagues are perfect.
But, you know, even their support of the WNBA, which is a whole mm-hmm. other conversation too, mm-hmm. and empowerment of female sports, like that for me is like, you know, like they are a class above the rest of the major leagues. And these are the examples as to why. By the way, Tony D'Angelo, you just threw him by in a passing. A great example of how status it really allows for misbehavior. Hey, like he's just a very good hockey player,
totally.
And therefore he's allowed to behave however he wants. And a team gets rid of him, and another, you know, there's 31 other ones that are just going to take him and allow for misbehavior and allow for someone to be in it. Like, and it comes back to that sort of patriarchal status around mm-hmm. like skill or talent or knowledge or money, and there's a number of other privileges that impact this, but those particularly around sports that just like severely limit or change the dynamics with regards to consequences that people face for misbehavior.
Yeah, totally. And everyone's talking about like how, oh, give him a second chance. This man has had at least four or five chances, and it enough, like the chance that, first of all, he did a racial slur in junior, he still got drafted. He still got signed. He got into a fight with his, like, okay, during this time, between this time, he became like a MAGA head, which is whatever, like politics aside, he was being kind of a douche about it. But then he got into a fight with his players. So that's like third chance. And now he's getting into, he got kicked out of that team. Now he's getting into his fourth chance. Yeah. Like, how many chances does this man need?
Well, but the challenge for me is not necessarily around number of chances, because I'm a mm-hmm. second, third, fourth, fifth, 20th chance guy. Sure. I do have time for that. Okay. Where I do struggle with, though, is what happens in between chances. What is the reciprocity that's occurred either in, you know, like the misbehavior or in the misintention? What have you done to, what's the corrective action that you've taken to change that behavior or to learn from, you know, that experience? Or, and frankly, I don't see an individual who in Tony D'Angelo, who was taking serious, making a serious change. You know, Logan Mailloux, say what you will about the Montreal Canadiens. You know, I think coming forward, removing himself from the draft, being really open and honest about the conviction, talking about how he needed to grow up and more maturity, you know, that's the type of thing that starts to buy you a second chance.
Or absolutely.
Chance. And I think that's, you know, that's the type of behavior. But again, you know, when you're rich or when you're incredibly skilled, particularly in sports, there's no need to make amends or to think through those things because there's always another opportunity. And yeah, that's what I struggle with.
And that's a good point because it also like, I like this because there's other good points made that in the sense that like if Logan, you know, he said, I'm going to take myself out of the draft. I'm going to do this. The Montreal Canadiens like took that sense of like him reconciling with what he did, like took that away from him. Right. Like, because then you put him in a tough situation where he has to like report to camp or. Then he has to make a statement that says, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to go into camp, or he is going to go to camp and he's just going to make another GM mad because blah, 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 whatever. Like this whole weird hockey culture thing as well, too. Like in regards to like, you can't anger any NHL GM because you looked at him wrong.
Or don't wear too high a number.
Or, you know, or have, you know, facial hair like Lou Lamoriello does. So yeah, like they took away his chance. Like they took away that chance of reconciliation, right? That took,
yeah.
Like if he wanted to do that, then let him do that, right? Then be like the NHL also needs to be the bigger person and say like, you don't need to take away that chance because now he doesn't have that chance to think and learn. And if he wanted to do it, just let him do that. Like it would have been a really good story for him to say, I'm not going to get drafted. I'm going to learn about this. I'm going to take this into consideration. I'm going to try to do the best as I can. And then later on next year, if I get drafted, I get drafted. And this is why I think like the Montreal Canadiens and the NHL deserve much more of the disrespect than I think than Logan does. I think Logan is what's stuck in a rock and a hard place. Like, what the hell is he going to do there? You know what I mean?
Well, it puts him in a really tough spot. You said that you said that you're completely right about that. And that's an excellent point. And, you know, I keep running through all these different scenarios in his head around like, but you know, he put himself in a position. Yeah. You said it perfectly. You said it.
Right. And so like, what is he going to do? Right. He's just going to be like, if you were a bigger person, obviously, I mean, I'm not saying that Logan's not a big person. I'm just like if you could say like, well, I'm not reporting, and then it becomes a bigger issue, and then it becomes, you know, like you could say that to the Montreal Canadiens, maybe just throw the ball in their court and be like, no, I said I wasn't going to get drafted, and just don't do this to me.
There's no way that, again, around culture, yeah. Like there's no respect for that. And, you know, even if he were to do that, like it would be really great if the Montreal Canadiens had said, oh, we're going to draft him, but he's not going to report to camp. He's going back to junior to gain that majority. We think he will be able to do it. We're betting on him learning his lessons. You know, it's not better. He still ends up the same thing, but maybe you do something like that. But there's no respect for that. And again, that's a cultural thing. And that's exactly it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like, and we kind of skimmed over the whole idea, the whole thing of the Blackhawks. So, I mean, if people don't really know this, please look up what's going on with the Chicago Blackhawks. It's an ongoing story. It's a pretty, like, and just letting you know it, it is could be a triggering story.
Yeah,
it
or does don't, involve, frankly. Like,
it's, yeah, like it's a big story, but I think that, like, you'll see some people try to hide it. And also you'll see some people try to elevate it. I think TSN is doing a really good job trying to elevate this. There's some people in The Athletic trying to elevate this story and make sure that it stays on top of the headlines and make sure that like people like Gary Bettman and like the Blackhawks GMs and people like Stan Bowman don't like forget about this, because this is my worry, is that people are going to forget about this. And I worry about that. So I'm glad that this story is like still in the headlines. And the more, yeah, you're right. The more you read about it, the more it's like, wow, absolutely disturbing. And it does involve sexual assault, and it does involve like people hiding it, and it's very, very reminiscent to what happened in Penn State.
Well, and again, as if we need another example of,
I know,
hockey culture, a central figure in some of the allegations dating back to the mid 2000s and the situation in Chicago is now the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens, who just drafted Logan.
That's exactly so, it.
Another example of culture. Yep, totally.
Let's talk about the Olympics. Did you watch any of the Olympics?
Oh yeah, yeah. Skateboarding.
Skateboarding was dope.
Surfing, not good.
Not conducive
to watching on television.
Totally agree.
Respect the athletes. This is the thing you have to be careful of when you're talking about these things. Respect the athletes, respect their hustle. That's a big deal. What they're doing is not easy, and they've dedicated their life to like what they're doing. But watching you sit on your surfboard, like watching waves, is not exactly my idea of a good time.
Not a good TV, not a good TV program. Did you see the climbing? That was cool.
Yeah, some of the climbing, not highlights. I didn't watch it live, but I did see some of the highlights.
That was
and
good too.
You know, the track is always good. Yeah, yeah. The Summer Olympics are actually really good.
They're fun. They're fun. Yeah. One of the big events, of course, is gymnastics. You know, like that's one of the highlight events in the Olympics. And of course, one of the highlight athletes in the Olympics is Simone Biles. She is considered one of the best, if not the best gymnastics in the world, gymnast in the world. But she didn't get into anything. She actually made a really fantastic decision. And I want to talk to you about this. Cause this also involves, another athlete, Naomi Osaka, who are taking their like mental health really into the forefront of our conversation. And I think that like if you don't know the story, Simone Biles, like I said, like a celebrated athlete, she went into one of the events and was like, you know what? I can't do this. I cannot. And it wasn't it wasn't like a physical injury. It was a mental health thing. And so she mentioned that it was a case of the twisties. Do you know about this? The twisties?
No.
Okay. I read it up on Sports Illustrated here. So, Simone Biles explained the twisties. It means that basically that, okay, so this is what she said. This is what Biles said. For anyone saying I quit, I didn't quit. My mind and body are simply not in sync. I don't think you realize how dangerous this is on a hard competition surface. Nor do I have to explain why I put health first. Physical health is mental health. So the idea of the twisties means that, Basically because you're flying in the air and you're twisting around. And it makes it really hard to like orient yourself. So if you're not orienting yourself and you don't know exactly where you are, if your body and mind are not connected, then it becomes really dangerous, right? Like it's like gymnast could break their neck or they could break their arm, or it just becomes really dangerous because as long, if you're not focused, if you're not there, then it just becomes like a very dangerous, like a very, very dangerous sport. So Simone Biles was like, you know, I just couldn't, because I wasn't in that mind, like it, for whatever reason, it just, she just wasn't connected to her body at that time. And I thought that was, I'm like, yeah, this is pretty normal. Like it seems like understandable,
reasonable decision,
reasonable thing. Yeah.
I don't feel comfortable spinning like six times and doing three flips onto a hard floor. So I don't want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seems totally reasonable. Right.
And totally understandable. And that's, and of course, like, the bad takes that came from it. So
of course that's how the world responded, right? Right.
Yeah.
That was how everyone in the world responded to this very reasonable thing to do.
Yes, of course. And, it's really, it was disappointing, frustrating. And also, I wanted to kind of connect this to the, like with Naomi Osaka, where she also, she was in the French Open and she was like, you know, this is really anxious for me to sit there and,
in tennis.
Yes. You're, yeah. Thank you. And she's like, and to face all the media and stuff like that. She didn't want to face the media, because of her mental health. And then the Open was like, well, you gotta, and then she's like, no, well, I don't want to. And then she's like, okay, well, then you get kicked out. And then she's like, no problem. So, very interesting, like parallels to what happened with Simone Biles. I don't know. Like, do you have any thoughts about this? Like, what's the connection around mental health and physical health, and why, like, these specifically two Black women, just got so, there's so much critique leveled onto them just for what happened there.
Well, let's just start right there. The standard is different, right? The standard is just simply different because of the way in which these women look. I truly believe that. And the media's reaction to it, general public's reaction to it. And the way, actually, I also think the way in which the stories were sort of blown up and became these sort of like cultural conversations are also related to that as well, too. I just don't think that, if they were racialized individuals, there would have been similar conversations, but I don't think to the extent of the criticism leveled wouldn't certainly have been as severe as others had, made it in the past. I mean, when you watch Olympic gymnastics, like, it is remarkable what these individuals do. It is absolutely remarkable because, but they are so powerful. They are so strong. They are so quick, and they're so, but it demands that they need to be so precise. And I think that, you know, just as it's like for Simone Biles to demonstrate that the mind is just as important as the body in that competition was one, really brave, but two, also opens up a new conversation about what it takes to compete in these sports. Let's not also forget just all the added pressure associated with her as well too. She's not only known as the greatest gymnast currently around, but likely of all time. She's done things that, you know, in floor and in various different disciplines that have never been accomplished before.
Yep.
You know. Yeah. And continually, and she's done amazing in collegiate sports and is a national hero. That comes with a lot of attention. Our own Canadian hero, Penny Oleksiak, most decorated Canadian Olympian, talked a lot about the pressures of being an Olympic champion and the expectations associated with that. This is hard. And this is not like a sport like the Big Four where you're going to get 16 games if you're an NFL player. You're going to get, 82 if you're in the NHL. Where it's like, it's a performance over a long period of time. There is immense amount of pressure because you basically, for many of these events, like it's one shot. It's one shot to get through qualifying. You have one opportunity to, in the finals, to do your best thing. You might have multiple attempts, but it's really like it's a really condensed sort of thing. It's immense pressure. And for anyone to not respect just that aspect of it, and that in addition to the fact that it's dangerous, to me, it's just absurd. It's just absurd.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absurd. And, you know, like I mentioned that you're totally right about this thought about, them being black women and them being, you know, having this immense amount of pressure put onto them just because of the color of their skin and just because, the women too. Like, and I cannot wait until, a male athlete does this because I'm really curious as to when it happens. Cause I haven't heard it. I haven't heard anybody being like, oh, like a goalie in hockey, for example, if they're not in it, like focused in it, they're forced to go out there. They're forced to do it. And they're going to take, you know, 100 mile per hour slap shots in the face. And being told to do that, right? I would love to see like somebody just like, you know, like I'm just thinking of like somebody like Marc-Andre Fleury who makes $7 billion and like is an older person, also a decorated athlete as well, would be like, you know what? I can't do it today. I just can't. And just mentally, not physically, just mentally. I think sometimes maybe we do that. Maybe we do when it's like somebody is like I'm just thinking of Adam Larson too, who like took some time off because of the death of his father. And people like respected that and were like, of course, please do that.
It's interesting what things, you know, the general public's willing to respect and what's not.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get
to. In terms of like what you remove yourself from, like, if it's like the mental health of a gymnast all of a sudden isn't as valued, but, you know, the male hockey player losing his father, he mm-hmm. can take as much time as he wants. You know, like there's a different type of thing. You know, there was a story an MLB manager got angry with a player because he took a day off to go watch the birth of his child. You know, and it was like, I don't remember the specifics around that except for that. But you know, somehow that's different sort of, mental challenges or things that are going on. And I don't mean like mental challenges, but like the challenges mentally are respected or have different types of like, allowance, in sports that's really interesting. And then I also think on top of that, it's gendered, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, of course, you know, she's dropping out because of her mental health. You know, like that was incredibly prevalent in those ways. And I think that's what you're trying to get at, right?
Yeah. And I think that like there's interesting like things where women are allowed to do certain things. Women are allowed to be men. Like if they're saying, okay, well, I'm going to have a child, that's no problem. Please do that. And someone else is like, you can take as much time as you want. But if it was a male athlete, they're just like, yeah, but take a day until see your child and then come back. And it's like, wow, this is a really momentous occasion. You should be allowed more than just a day. Yeah. But that's just me. But at the same time, there is these kind of very gendered expectations as to what are allowed, what we allow for women and for men to face. And it's interesting what the backlash was on this. And also like, maybe we can talk a little bit more about this too. It's like, I think a lot of it comes from like these like shit posters, like just real assholes online, just like stirring this culture war too. Cause I think that's a big part of it. It's like, these people who are just like, they see somebody like Simone Biles, they see somebody like Naomi Osaka, and they're just like, these people are pushing the status quo further and further away from what they feel is comfortable. And they're somehow attached to this idea of like leftist politics. And they just like stir the pot and just stir this weird culture war thing.
But
right?
My response to that is like, what does it matter to you? What does it matter to you? Like, do you have, like, are you really that invested in how many gold medals the United States female gymnast team wins? Are you really invested in, have you made an investment? Like, have you bet on Simone Biles and her performance at the Olympics? If you had, that was a really dumb thing to do. Sports betting is a bad choice. One. And two, like, really? Like, outside of like, those are the only things, like, unless you were like, you know, there is like, you have no business actually having an opinion. But, you know, someone breaks an arm. Oh, darn, that sucks. He can't play he's out, you know, 4 to 6 weeks with a broken arm. We're all okay with that. But like, But you're going to get like, no one's saying like, oh, he should be playing with the broken arm. No. Well, sometimes that's happened in hockey.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's
you know what I'm saying? Like, but like, why do you care? Like, what does it matter? I do not get it. How is this impacting your life beyond the fact that you just want, and I, like you said, to just like stir up controversy and stir up, right? Like,
I think that's the thing, right? I think it's like, oh, I just saw like, it's always the same assholes too, right? It's like, I said, when like the U.S. women lost in soccer and the Canadians beat them, and it was like freaking Dinesh D'Souza, just like, oh, these women are like, you know, Megan Rapinoe, of course she's going to lose. She's this leftist, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, it's just connecting them to like this idea that everything on the left is wrong and everything. And it's just stirring up this fucked up culture world that we're in. And I think that Simone Biles and Naomi Osaka got into that. They personally haven't, but like the people like not only just defending her, but also like are accusing her are just that's caught up into this weird culture war. And
well,
just,
and it's not fair to them, really. I think you're totally right.
No, it's not.
I think you're totally right. I mean, like, think about the culture war around what people are wearing in the Olympics. Like, right? Like, there's like the gymnast sort of like piece of this around like Simone Biles and her mental health and what she's done. But there's also, you know, some really constructive, I felt, at times, conversations around the difference in uniform between men and women in the Olympics. Gymnastics being one, beach volleyball being another one.
Yeah, it was the big one. Yeah.
You know, that was the big one. That was the one that set it off. But there were some teams. I think the German national gymnast team came with a slightly different outfit for their female competitors too. You know, like, but again, like, just caught up in this, like they can wear what they want. It, you know, frankly, the athletes should be allowed to do what they want. Like that, they're there to perform. You know, if they can't, then that's what it is. If they should be able to wear what they want, but there's rules around this and these conversations, like. I'm just so torn about the Olympics this year because, like, you know, and I feel badly, like, because we are like we're kind of beating down on, drilling into some like really negative situations. But I've also got this other piece of me, which is like, and I'm interested in how you're reconciling this because I'm like, these are some really shitty stories around like the sexism in uniforms and some miles. But this is also the only thing. That really serves to further female sports in any meaningful way.
The Olympics?
This is the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
Like it's the only time every 2 years is when their ratings, the people that view their sport, the interest in what they're doing, particularly female sports is abnormally outsized. Mm-hmm. You know, we've tried other things, you know, CBC does cover aquatics and other things throughout the year. But like, let's be honest. This is the single most important event for people for women's athletics, like and across the board, the winter and summer as well too, and so you know, at the same time, we're struggling with these really serious issues and particular examples of sexism. But I also like I'm finding that difficult to reconcile with the fact that it's also provides an opportunity to give these women. You know, the credit and opportunity to perform and to be seen that they wouldn't have otherwise had. I don't know. How do you reconcile that? Because I really struggle with that.
It's you make a good point. And I think it's like, it's the same conversation I have in my head about the World Cup every 4 years. Like every time the World Cup comes up, I'm just like, man, I love the World Cup. But like, it's my favorite tournament. However, there's all these terrible things that happen with it. And I'm just like, it's really hard for me to like, to reconcile those things. Once you start learning those things, it's like, you know, John Oliver did a really good piece about it on his show, like how the sausage is made, and the sausage is pretty shitty. There's a lot of shit in there. And it's the same thing with the Olympics. It's the same idea. Cause you're right. Like there is, I was listening to a hockey podcast, and they were talking about the National Women's Hockey League and how there's been a lot of like weird infighting within the league where there's been a weird, it's just been lack of like barriers and barriers and barriers.
Well, there's internal. Two leagues, right? And they've competed against each
other. Yeah. One of them folded and one of the, it's just like this weird politics thing there as well too. And there's been, it's been just barrier after barrier for, and just really reducing the progress of women's hockey. But yes, you're right. Like when the Olympics come, everyone's like, who cares about all that? It's like US versus Canada. Like, of course, that's it, right? Like, it doesn't matter about this, right? So, when I was listening to that and I was thinking about like the WNBA and the WNBA, did, you know, have struggled for years, but they have had continuous partnership with the NBA, and the NBA, has tried, and like, obviously the NBA is not perfect, obviously. But they have tried really hard to like connect with the WNBA, to like connect people like Steph Curry with Sue Bird and others as well too. Like in a way that they can, like produce, a content that's like, okay, here's a men's basketball game and here's a women's basketball game. We're going to put them together like side by side. You can like pay attention and players, you'll get to know who the players are and so on and so forth. And so they collaborated really well. The NHL obviously are not doing that, because not only because it's the NHL, but it's also because of this internal politics that's going on within the Women's Hockey League. And so,
but I'm with you on that. I would push back on the hockey thing, because you know what? Ultimately, what the NBA did, they invested in women's athletics. They invested in the WNBA. Money came forward, and there were significant issues in professional women's basketball before the NBA got involved. And it's amazing how easy it is for people to start talking together and working things out and making considerations when there's a significant funder. And if the NHL was interested, saw it as of something of value, they would put their money where their mouth is and they could get something done.
That's my point. Like, and that's my thought, was that like the NBA actually put a concerted effort into making this league happen.
Right.
The NHL could do the same thing. It's just they're stepping out of it being like, well, it's, you know, I don't want to get involved with it. However, you're right. The NHL could do that. And it's the same thing with soccer, right? Like, I follow Arsenal, but I also follow Arsenal Women's Football League in Instagram, and just knowing who they are and stuff like that. And so I get to learn a little bit about the league itself. And, you know, if you're a sports fan, I think that's a responsibility that you should have too. Like if you are a hockey fan, you should start following the Women's Hockey League. If you're like, I'm a soccer fan, I started following the women's soccer leagues and stuff like that. And like, I follow Arsenal WFC. They're a fantastic team. And so it's like, it's really cool to be able to, you know, go to these things and support them as best they can. And yeah, just like, and like when somebody tells you who your favorite athletes are, like you gotta name some women, man. Like there's some amazing women. And like, even I got caught into that too. Cause I was like, you know, like, oh, I think Alphonso Davies is right now like the best Canadian soccer player ever. And someone's like, what about Christine Sinclair? I was like, of course. Like, how can I not say Christine Sinclair? Like, she is the best. She's the GOAT. Like, and it was such a dumb thing for me. And I was like, of course. But this is like one of those things where I was like, fuck, like how could I forget like one of the best soccer players in the world? Right?
But that's just exactly it, right? Like, and we had a similar conversation with Cristiano Ronaldo and the number of international goals scored or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And it was like, well, Christine Sinclair is like, you know, scored like 50 more goals than him.
Yeah.
But unless you have things like honestly, unless you have the Olympics, you know, those players, those leagues, those sports, that female representation falls by the wayside. And that's the reconciliation. Like, yes, okay, there are opportunities to follow other women's professional sports. There is, you know, this national women's hockey league that's tried to make a go of it. And then, you know, with their first thing, did an interview with Barstool Sports, but whatever. You know, there is the WNBA. Don't let me get started. Like, my PR brain right now is like,
I know, I can tell. You're just like, know. Nope.
Really? Nope, that's your there. First interview? Barstool Sports is where you're going to go. That's where you're. And then when you get blowback, your athletes get blowback, you're going to be surprised. I mean, this is that's another great example of like, you know, they did have a female executive, but there was some dumb man in that head office saying, go to Barstool because that's where all the fans are, not anticipating any of the blowback when people say, wait a second, Barstool Sports is problematic. And then the blowback from the fan base that is problematic.
anyway.
Yeah.
You want to talk about setting things up to fail. Like, I have a lot of feelings about the last female women's attempt to form a hockey league. But
that's the thing. It's like there's always this weird politics, and the NHL could easily just be like, here's some money. We're going to put executives. We're going to put the name on it. We're going to call it the WNHL. And that's it. And like, no, everything else would just fall by the wayside, and everything else, like, you know what I mean?
Do you think the Toronto Maple Leafs couldn't afford to carry a women's hockey team?
Of course they can. Every team in the NHL can afford to do this. Every team. The budget of making the whole freaking league is half of a salary cap. It's like $40 million. The salary cap in the NHL is like $81
million. You do back-to-backs. You sell them as one ticket. You go for the women's game, and then you stay for the NHL game. They've done that kind of stuff in the past. You know, you can, it's doable.
It's doable.
You can do two conferences.
It would be so easy.
We've lost the plot on the Olympics. That's what we've done, is we've lost the plot on the Olympics here. It's like the defining moment of the Olympics. It defines the Olympics as the contradiction, right? Mm-hmm. In the same way that you have this conversation around like sexism in the games versus opportunity to display, you know, female athletics, you have this same thing where you have like this incredibly corrupt organization, but these amazing athletes that deserve space to be seen and to be celebrated as well too. Like, there's so many of these contradictions with the Olympics that it's just so interesting.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I love that the Olympics also is kind of like, has this amateur element. No, the pros, but at the same time, it has like this idea of like, oh, you don't get to, like, so-and-so from Italy is actually also a, you know, he's a nurse, but he's also is one of the best rowers in the world. This combination of like cool, like athleticism plus like this idea of like this person is like one of us. And I love that. Totally. I really do.
Totally.
And it's
totally,
that's one of the awesome things about the Olympics. And yeah, you're right. And like, I don't know what to say about like, how do we get like somebody like Simone Biles just be recognized outside of the every 4 years, or even just like, you're not even just like the men's too, like someone like Usain Bolt or somebody, like, how do you do that? Like, it's just, or even the grass or somebody like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, there's some names that sort of like, I would say like Simone Biles and like you said, you have to be so good or do something so special or be something so unique that you sort of can transcend the games. But there's like one or two of those names a year sort of internationally, and maybe a country like, you know, Penny Oleksiak will be like a household name for a while. There'll be like a couple names from every country, but those that disappears fast, right? Like, it's,
yeah, totally.
It's like a
totally
weird, did. The Olympics are such a weird thing. They make me feel.
It is a weird thing. It is. We're going to have one next year. So, and it's going to be in China. So we're going to talk about that one.
Oh, yes.
In a year. Oh boy. Yeah. Elliot, thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks for everything you do, man. And like, I know that I listened to your other hockey podcast and kind of being like, I miss this a bit.
Well, anytime you want to chat. Anytime you get tired of yelling about the Oilers on Twitter, you know?
It's not going to happen. Just wait till the season.
You're a good follower for that.
For sure.
I wonder what Herman's going to think about this.
And you know, it's going to be like something.
30 seconds later, I'll find out.
Exactly. I should quit Twitter for a bit. That's going to be my New Year's resolution. Elliot, it was a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you so much. It was so nice to see you. Thank you for all you do and for, you know, bringing this community together and being a part of it. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you and our relationship and our friendship. So I feel very blessed to know you.
Thank you for inviting
me.
It's great. I mean that too, man. You're a good friend. So, we'll talk offline and, Yeah, I hope you enjoyed this version of Cool Takes. And like I said, you just want to make sure you follow us at Modern Manhood at Modern Man Pod. You can follow Next Gen Men at Next Gen Men. You can also go to nextgenmen.ca/join. If you ever want to join our next gen men, what are you going to land up? Ambassadors?
Men, I like Menbassadors, but.
Menbassadors. Okay, I'm going to send this to Jake. So just calling them Next Gen Members, Menbassadors. Yeah. If you want to become a Next Gen Ambassador, you can head up to nextgenmen.ca/join. You can join this amazing online community with a bunch of amazing people, and you can talk about the things that we talk about, and you can also join this specific broadcast itself and actually ask us questions and tell us what to talk about. And we didn't get a chance to talk about Brett's question, but I think it's something that I want to talk about in the later episode. So I want to hold on to that, Brett. I didn't forget you. I just don't think we could have fit this into this conversation. But it was about trans athletes, and I think there's going to be more conversations about that later on. So anyways, yeah, have a wonderful day, have a wonderful night, and we'll talk to you later. Peace. Bye.